It's not necessarily a pleasant conversation, but it's an important one. If faced with a serious illness, what are your wishes about end-of-life care? A new survey out this morning by the UMass Medical School shows only about 14% of Massachusetts patients have had that conversation, and about one-third do not want to have it at all. Dr. Atul Gawande of Brigham and Women's Hospital, the author of Being Mortal, a book that helped launch statewide efforts to improve end-of-life care, joined us to talk about the survey results, starting with some good news.
We're seeing the first signs of real change, and we found that there were significantly more respondents who said that their dying loved ones' wishes were followed and honored by care providers. That was up from 58% in 2016 to 71% this year. That's a big leap.
You know, I also found it interesting that when those conversations do take place, it's the patients or the family members that start them 60% of the time, according to your numbers. Do you think that means that doctors are still uncomfortable or too busy to have these conversations, or is there something else going on?
No, you put your finger on it. I think it's a bad sign for us in the medical profession that patients have so much better care when they have their conversation about what their wishes for their care turns out to be. We've got a long way to go, and it is what you say. It's a mix of anxiety. You know, we want to be as optimistic as possible and not talk about what happens if your health worsens. It's uncomfortable for us and can be uncomfortable for patients. And so we can avoid the difficult conversation. And yet, our survey also showed that when people had that conversation with their clinician, their care was rated 3/4 excellent or very good. When that conversation didn't happen, only 1/4 found their care was excellent or very good, let alone in line with their wishes.
Most of the people who responded to the survey, as I understand it, were women. And older, white, married women, as I understand it, are the ones most likely to make an end-of-life plan with family members. How do you get more men involved in the conversation?
Yeah, so men are much less likely than women. High school-only educated are less likely than more than high school. And then also minorities are less likely to have these conversations. And if you think about it, these if you take high school-educated men, for instance, or minorities, those will be people who distrust the most that people in the system are actually going to fight for them the way they want to. They are often the people who feel the most excluded in the system. And so our ability to say, no, you have a voice, that we actually care what your wishes are for your quality of life and not just your quantity of life, and that we're going to fight for you when you have that conversation. I think the survey indicates we still have a long way to go where people regard this as a normal conversation to have for everybody, and that it's that having the conversation is not a sign of we are just trying to give up and walk away.
There also needs to be greater conversations between spouses, right? Because as I read the data, it seems like that spouses just assume that their opposite will know what they want at the end of life, so they haven't gotten around to talking about it.
That's right. That person, despite being in our lives day in, day out, maybe because they're in our lives day in, day out, we don't have the big picture conversation. You know, I had this conversation with my wife, and we found we had very different opinions about life. I was of a view that, you know, I could be Stephen Hawking. I could be completely paralyzed, unable to be physically connected in the world. But if my brain was working and I could communicate with you, keep me alive, keep me going. My wife thought, well, that's not the way I would look at it. Her view was, if I'm happy, you know what that looks like, and so keep me going. If I look like I'm not going to be capable of joy and happiness, then let me go. And as we go on through life, we will continue to have that conversation. I may change what I think. She may change what she thinks as we experience what happens. But it's a vital conversation.
So if I might ask, do your end-of-life plans take into consideration your thought processes?
Absolutely. You know, I wrote about that. One person said, if I can eat chocolate ice cream and watch football on television, that'd be good enough for me. And that to me was like the best living will ever. What is the minimum quality of life you'd find acceptable? You know, For me, it is to communicate and to be able to connect with people. For my wife, it's just to experience joy. And understanding that about one another is so important and makes it so that if that terrible moment ever comes, I know what she wants and what she really thinks.
So let me ask you one last question. What's the one task you would hope that people listening to this conversation do today to start planning?
It's the first most basic thing. Pick who is going to be your healthcare agent, who will speak for you when you can't. And then I'm going to tack on one task additionally. Talk to that person and tell them what you really care about, what the minimum quality of life is that you would find acceptable. That is what we need to do.
Dr. Atul Gawande, thank you very much for speaking to WBUR's Morning Edition about this really important topic.
Thank you.
Dr. Atul Gawande is a medical researcher, writer, and a surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston.